Last night we took a look at Mary Oliver's poem, Mindful. This morning, another Mary Oliver poem, Peonies. Some of you probably know that one. This morning, the green fists of the peonies are getting ready to break my heart as the sun rises. As the sun strokes them with his old buttery fingers, and they open, pools of lace, white and pink. And all day the black ants climb over them, boring their deep and mysterious holes into the curls, craving the sweet sap, taking it away to their dark underground cities. And all day under the shifty wind, as in a dance to the great wedding, the flowers bend their bright bodies and tip their fragrance to the air and rise, their red stems holding all that dampness and recklessness, gladly and lightly. Beauty, the brave, the exemplary, blazing open. Do you love this world? Do you cherish your humble and silky life? Do you adore the green grass with its terror beneath? Do you also hurry half-dressed and barefoot into the garden and softly and exclaiming of their dearness, fill your arms with their white and pink flowers, with their honeyed heaviness, their lush trembling, their eagerness to be wild and perfect for a moment before they are nothing forever. That's the East. We're all born with it. It's as close as anything could possibly be to where we're sitting right now. Okay, one poem to evoke the trickster. This is by that great Persian trickster, Kabir. Kabir. And I believe this is a Robert Bly translation. Are you looking for me? I'm in the next seat. My shoulder is against yours. Everybody's looking next to them. Are you looking for me? I'm in the next seat. My shoulder is against yours. You'll not find me in stupas, not in Indian shrine rooms, nor in synagogues, nor in cathedrals. Not in masses, nor kirtans, not in legs winding around your own neck. Not in eating nothing but vegetables. When you really look for me, you'll see me instantly. You will find me in the tiniest house of time. Kabir says, student, tell me, what is God? He is the breath inside the breath. There's Kabir. Okay, so I guess I've already mentioned the assignment, if you will, for evoking that was the praise walk this morning. I hope some of you got to do that. I know some of you did. It's a great practice. If you found some value in that, you might practice that in as many mornings as you can. Just simply going out into nature. That's any place where there's gravity. Okay, so any questions about the East before we divide into dyads again? East dimension of the self. One thing, the self. It's like a diamond or a jewel with four facets, but it's one thing. Because sometimes people say, it's kind of hard for me to separate the East of myself from the North, for example. Well, right, it's one thing, the self, but it has these facets. Everybody's worried about going to the principal's office. Okay, so let me ask you again to divide into pairs. It doesn't have to be the same pair as last time. And I want to invite you to tell each other stories from the East. It could be your praise walk this morning or some other praise walk some other morning that you did. It could be when you found yourself embodying the archetype of the trickster or the fool. Some people specialize in a whole lifetime as the sacred fool. My best friends have always been sacred fools. And I think it's because as a personality type, I'm very West. And so to balance out, I study, which is a funny verb to use in this case, with fools that I learned a lot from. So tell each other a story about your having embodied the East in your life, or about that you probably never have, and whatever feelings you have about that, and what it tells you about you. And your partner will not correct you if you're wrong about yourself. And there'll be a chime in 5 minutes to switch. Okay, here's a little something for the Jungians. Anybody want to identify themselves as a Jungian? More or less, all of us? Here's something that gets to one place where I think Jung was wrong. It's always kind of thrilling to be able to say that. I actually feel much more humble than that. I have no idea he was wrong about anything, but this one you might find interesting. The four functions of consciousness you can put on this map. I'm not sure exactly what the words he used to translate into English are, but sensing, feeling, intuition, and thinking. Right? He used perceiving, not sensing. Perceiving, feeling. He did say sensing. He actually said something in German, but... Okay, so... you can put these on this map, and it's quite, for those of you who know astrology, there's a concept there that each planet has a native home in a sign, but any planet can be in any sign. Well, it's a similar idea here, that each of the four functions... Each of the four dimensions of the self, these sets of archetypes, each one can use all four functions. But there's a native home to each of the four functions. Are you with me? Basically? Okay. But before I tell you what they are, I want to modify Jung based on an idea of a teacher of mine who's also a colleague and a friend. And those of you who know Jeanette, maybe none of you do, she's also, where are you? She's right there in that empty seat. Our colleague and friend is Stephen Gallegos. He's from New Mexico. He's the man who developed the active imagination system called the personal totem pole. Very powerful system. Steve, among other things, is fluent in German. And he's a Jungian, and he's read a lot of Jung. And he says that the four functions are actually sensing, thinking, feeling, and imagination. Well, why did Jung say intuition if it's really imagination? And Steve went through and read much of the Jungian opus and said, you know, whenever Jung gave an example of intuition, it was always imagination. And so Steve Gallegos suggests that Jung's personal intuition worked through imagination. And so he just called it intuition, but it's actually imagination. And then Steve goes on to say that other people, 25% of us, our intuition works primarily through thinking. And 25% of us, our intuition works primarily through feeling. And 25% of us, sensing. And so intuition is a word that we have that says, basically, I don't know how I know this, I just know it. But then you could ask someone, okay, fine, but how did that come to you? And people will say, well, the way it always does, through sensing. And 25% will say, the way it always does, through feeling. Mine happens to work primarily through imagination as well. I defended Jung to my friend Steve for a long time. I said, no, it can work any of these four ways. So the native places is in the north is the native place of thinking, the east, sensing, the south, feeling, and the west, imagination. And if it's not obvious by tonight why those are there, then come ask me, but it'll probably be obvious. Okay, so that brings us around to the south dimension of the self. Is this wild, enchanted, emotive, sensual, indigenous, sometimes I add magical, self. It's the part of our wholeness that's very body-oriented, emotion-oriented. It's the dimension of ourself that experiences ourself as indigenous. Indigenous means lives in the place which where she is from, belongs as a member of her habitat. The idea of a non-indigenous human is in some way a kind of a nutty idea. But it also makes a point that we have distanced, separated ourselves from our indigenosity in our culture so far. It's like we don't think of ourselves as indigenous. But in fact, each one of us in this room, I know, is from Earth. I don't think we're from Mars or Venus. I think we're from Earth. And we were shaped, we are what we are by being a member of the Earth community. So the self dimension of the self knows that, lives that, experiences that directly. This part of ourselves is able to have all the emotions fully, full-bodied flow of emotionality. This aspect of us is wild, the way I was speaking last night of like a wild flower is wild. We know we've been evoked to be the way we are by the others, the trees, the rain, frogs, the other humans, the mountains, the clouds, those animals that used to be our predators who helped us become human, and now we don't get their help to be human anymore because we've eliminated most all of them. Sensual. This part is very body-centered. Oh, I left it out, but we need the word erotic there too, in the south. Naturally, wildly erotic. And not just erotic within the human realm, but multi-specially, that's a word, erotic. An erotic response to the natural world. The wild self is a physical intimacy with everything. There's a lot of domains, of course, in modern contemporary society where this is repressed. But there's other domains where we say yes to it. We usually don't say yes to it in third grade classrooms. And the teachers do their best to say no as much as they can in seventh grade classrooms. Which is too bad. Well, the classroom is the part that's too bad. Here's a few poems to evoke the wild self. I think I'll read just part of this one. This comes from Robert McLean. He's actually one of the first poets that woke me up to poetry in the late 70s. This one's called Nass River, N-A-S-S, Nass River. Robert McLean, M-A-C, capital L-E-A-N. Tent, tethered among jackpine and bluebells. Tent, tethered among jackpine and bluebells. Lace wings rise from rock incubators. Lace wing is a type of insect, bug. Tent tethered among jackpine and bluebells. Lace wings rise from rock incubators. Wild geese flying north, and I can't remember who I'm supposed to be. I want to learn how to purr. Abandon myself. Have mistresses and maiden hair fern. Own no tomorrow nor yesterday. A blank, shimmering space forward and back. I want to think with my belly. I want to name all the stars, animals, flowers, birds, rocks in order to forget them, start over again. I want to wear the seasons, harlequin, become ancient and etched by weather. I want to be snow pulse, ruminating ungulate, pebble at the bottom of the abyss, candle burning darkness rather than flame. I want to peer at things, shameless, observe the unfastening, that stripping of shape by dusk. I want to sit in the meadow, a rotten stump pungent with slime mold. Home for pupae and grubs, concentric rings collapsing into the passacaglia of time. I want to crawl inside someone and hibernate one entire night with no clocks to wake me, thighs fragrant loam. I want to melt. I want to swim naked with an otter. I want to turn inside out, exchange nuclei with the sun. Toward the mythic kingdom of summer, I want to make blind motion using my ribs as a raft, following the spiders as they set sail on their tasseled, shining silk. Sometimes, even a feather is enough to fly. Well, that ended up being the whole poem. Couldn't stop. The wild self. Mary Oliver, doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Okay, emotions are part of the wild self. This is Rumi, another 13th century Persian. This one's called the guest house. The guest house. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Okay, those of you who think that's a little crazy, you have some work to do in the South. Okay, here's another aspect of the South, the wild South. This is an Eskimo poem from the Nalungiak, and it's been titled Magic Words. In the very earliest time when both people and animals lived on Earth, a person could become an animal if he wanted to, and an animal could become a human being. Sometimes they were people and sometimes animals, and there was no difference. All spoke the same language. That was the time when words were like magic. The human mind had mysterious powers. A word spoken by chance might have strange consequences. It would suddenly come alive, and what people wanted to happen could happen. All you had to do was say it. Nobody can explain this. That's just the way it was. Okay, one more poem. I don't know the name of the human person, but it was from the Nilungiak people, who are circumpolar. Okay, back to Mary Oliver. Last poem to evoke the wild self. Oh, by the way, you'll see on the interpersonal side that the two of the archetypes I chose for the wild self are the green man, who we met yesterday, and the feminine version is Artemis, the wild woman. And we saw this statue on the campus here, a few of us yesterday. It's a little bit south, interestingly. South from here. She's about 8 foot tall. She's down the walk here a little ways. And there's a plaque that tells you who donated her but doesn't tell you who she is. Does anybody know who she is?
The river. I mean, stream.
She's a spirit of the land.
Spirit of the land? Oh, there she is. Okay. That's what she looked like. She's green, incidentally. And she looks like an Artemis figure to me. Artemis, the Greek goddess, who is... I don't think she's meant to be a Greek goddess, but Artemis is a Greek goddess, who's a goddess of fertility and the hunt. She hunts animals, and she's also the protector of the animals. And she's the goddess of childbirth. Body. Wild. She's probably one of the... would be considered a triple goddess. Creator, sustainer, or maintainer. Creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Triple goddess. I think you could say this would be the place of ecstasy. Is the South the place of ecstasy? Ecstasy, ecstasis, not stuck. In some ways, you could say the South is the place of ecstasy. The South is not stuck. That inner circle is our four kinds of stuckness we'll get to tomorrow. Before, while I'm thinking of it, if those of you who do the task that I'm going to, or the assignment or the exercise that I'm recommending for after lunch, which is on your handout, on the self exercises handout, some of you might go to that goddess who might be an Artemis figure, and you might, part of your exercise might happen there. There could be a line. Okay, this is Mary Oliver, Reckless Poem. Reckless poem. Today, again, I am hardly myself. Oh, by the way, after this poem, I'm going to ask you to divide into your two pairs again and to swap stories about times when you really embodied your wild self. This might risk embarrassment to tell these stories. And your partner is sworn to secrecy. It's automatically confidential. Okay. If there's some Quakers you don't want to overhear you, you can go into a corner somewhere and tell. You can use sign language, you can draw it out, and you can swear it wasn't you, really. It's a story about your neighbor, someone you read about. But a time when you really embodied your wild self. Or if you're quite sure you might never have, then you might want to share your feelings about that missing dimension of your wholeness. Okay, reckless poem. Today again, I'm hardly myself. It happens over and over. It's heaven sent. I'm hardly myself. It's heaven sent. It flows through me like the blue wave. Today again, I'm hardly myself. It happens over and over. It's heaven sent. It flows through me like the blue wave. Green leaves. Green leaves. You may believe this or not. Green leaves have once or twice emerged from the tips of my fingers. Somewhere deep in the woods in the reckless seizure of spring. Though, of course, I also know that other song. I know that other song, the sweet passion of oneness. Notice that she knows that's a different song, oneness. Just yesterday, I watched an ant crossing a path through the tumbled pine needles. She toiled, and I thought, she will never live another life but this one. The ant. And I thought, if she lives her life with all of her strength, is she not wonderful and wise? And I continued this up the miraculous pyramid of everything until I came to myself. I thought, she will never live another life but this one. And I thought, if she lives her life with all her strength, is she not wonderful and wise? Is she not wonderful and wise? And then I continued this up the miraculous pyramid of everything until I came to myself. And still, even in these northern woods, on these hills of sand, I have flown from the other window of myself to become white heron. I have flown from the other window of myself to become white heron, blue whale. Red fox, hedgehog. Oh, sometimes already my body has felt like the body of a flower. Sometimes already my heart is a red parrot, perched among strange dark trees, flapping and screaming. Okay, since this is the wild self, I'm going to give you a serenade with the drum as you divide into partners and 5 minutes each. Okay, I know this is a paradoxical statement, but time's up for wildness. Okay, we have one more dimension. Your task, should you accept, for the self-self is on your handout under self-exercises, the third one, the one that starts at the bottom of the first side. It's the dialogue with the wild, of course. And I recommend it for after lunch. Because the South is both summer and midday. Midday. So this is a really good wild self exercise. You'd want to bring your wild self. You want to go as your wild self to do this. And it's one of the longer exercises to describe, at least. So rather than go through it now with you, just hope you all have your handout and you can read through that and take those steps, is what, 6 steps or so to this exercise. This is a dialogue across the species boundaries. It's something that us humans have done instinctively, naturally, for 99% of our 1 million or 2 million years on the planet. And in the last several hundred years, we've forgotten how to do it, but we're all the same, we're still the same humans that did this most of our time as a species. Let yourself be surprised what happens when you do this. If anybody ends up having any questions about it, see if you can grab me at lunch and I'll try to help out. The fourth dimension of the self, of our wholeness, is the west And to ourselves, this appears as the muse, as one of her or his guises. The muse, the deep creativity that we're channels for, but we can't, if we're honest, we can't, the ego, the conscious self, cannot take any ownership for whatsoever. The West can also be the guide to soul. Let me share with you this poem that I think evokes the guide to soul aspect of the West dimension of the self. This one's from Adrienne Rich, 20th century Western poet. This one's called Prospective Immigrants, Please Note. So you might imagine the guide to soul, that part of yourself that says, the guide to self says, you know, the downward journey into the darkness is a great thing to do. It's really important. It's essential. And darkness, by the way, the guide to soul says, has its own intrinsic value that has nothing to do with learning something in order to get more light later. The guide to soul says there are things we can find in darkness that we cannot find anywhere else. And darkness has as much treasure as light. And so let's go not up but down, not to hell but to the underworld to gather those dark treasures. So the guide to soul might say to this, if you're on the edge of an underworld journey, the guide to soul sees you as a prospective immigrant. And here's what she says, prospective immigrants, please note. Either you will go through this door or you will not go through. Either you'll go through this door or you'll not go through. If you go through, there's always the risk of remembering your name. If you go through, there's always the risk of remembering your name. Things look at you doubly, and you must look back and let them happen if you go through the door. Things look at you doubly, and you must look back and let them happen. Either you will go, prospective immigrants, please note, either you'll go through this door or you'll not go through this door. If you go through, there's always the risk of remembering your name. Things look at you doubly and you must look back. You must look back and let them happen. If you do not go through, it is possible to live worthily. Prospective immigrants, please note. If you do not go through, it is possible to live worthily, to maintain your attitudes, to hold your position, to die bravely. It's possible if you don't go through. But much will blind you. Much will evade you. At what cost? Who knows? The door itself makes no promises. It is only a door. So how does she sound to you? Is it cruel? Is it loving? Is it what you always hoped someone would say to you? Okay, the West self is also what us Jungians would call the anima or the animus, the inner man or the inner woman, the guide to soul, the part of ourselves we normally don't think is of ourselves. The other half that we need to find and reclaim in order to be a whole human being. And the West self is also sometimes just thought of as the beloved of soul, or the inner beloved. The West self resonates with the underworld and with dark and with soul. Whereas on the other side of the circle, the East self resonates most with light and the upper world. With spirit or the divine. So the West, which is where the sun sets everywhere on the planet, West, is the sunset, is the transition from light to dark. And it's our introduction to the dark mysteries, the central part of being human. The soul poets, always, you always find them embracing the dark and celebrating the dark. So here's an example from Rilke, what I feel one of the most profound soul poets. Here's his poem, You Darkness. This is a David White translation. You darkness from which I come, I love you more than all the fires that fence out the world. Because the fire makes a circle for everyone so that no one sees you, darkness, anymore. You darkness from which I come, I love you more than all the fires that fence out the world. So the fire makes a circle for everyone so that no one sees you anymore. But darkness holds it all. The shape and the flame. The animal and myself. How it holds them. All powers, all sight. And it is possible. Its great strength is breaking into my body. I have faith in the night. So it's the West Self that would say this, I believe. You darkness from which I come, you darkness from which I come, I love you more than all the fires that fence out the world, for the fire makes a circle for everyone so that no one sees you anymore. But darkness holds it all, the shape and the flame, the animal and myself. How it holds them, all powers, all sight. And it is possible. Its great strength is breaking into my body. I have faith in the night. Rainer Maria Rilke, the German poet, early 20th century, translated by David White. It's Rilke. And just a couple more lines from Rilke. Embrace both the West and the East, both the darkness and the light, as shown, for example, here. You see, I want a lot. Maybe I want it all. The darkness of each endless fall, the shimmering light of each ascent. You see, I want a lot. Maybe I want it all. The darkness of each endless fall, the shimmering light of each ascent. See, maybe I didn't say it yet. The West is the place of romance. The South is more about eroticism, sexuality, the body, emotion. But the West is the place of romance, that deep mystery that you might have suspected girls had or boys had when you were 14. That's the West. Rumi is one of the best evocateurs of the West, the dark West, in its romance aspects. For example, I would love to kiss you. The price of kissing is your life. Now my loving is running toward my life shouting, what a bargain, let's buy it. At West is that place that's both dangerous and alluring. If you fall in love, and you really fall in love, the beloved will seem to you, has seemed to you, both endlessly alluring and ultimately dangerous. You know, if you really surrender, it's all over. The show is over. Your way of belonging to the world has just been thrown out. So it's that kind of death. Longing is the core of mystery. Longing itself brings the cure. The only rule is suffer the pain. Your desire must be disciplined, and what you want to happen in time, sacrificed. Love is a madman, working his wild schemes, tearing off his clothes, running through the mountains, drinking poison, and now quietly choosing annihilation. Well, there's a few examples. So, before lunch, I want to invite you into one more dyad. On your handout is a recommended exercise for early evening, right after dinner would be good. Maybe before dinner. This time of year, after dinner is better for sunset. And it's called the Anima Animus Walk. There's actually two versions. So if this makes you nervous, there's two options to choose from. And as always, pick the more challenging, difficult one. And you'll see it's described here pretty well. The first one has to do with courting the beloved. Courting the beloved who exists in the world, as the world, and within yourself all at the same time. And the other one is to go for a walk as a woman, if you're particularly masculine, or to go for a walk as a man if you're feminine. And this describes it a little bit. So, are there any questions before we divide into pairs again? And what I'd like you to do is tell a story about a time when you really fully embodied your West self. And in the sense of the muse, or you had an experience of your West self, the muse, the guide to soul, the anima animus, the beloved. Or if you can't think of a time you have, then tell your partner about how it feels to be estranged or alienated from that part of you. Or you can talk about your doubts about whether such a thing actually exists. Any questions before we do that? Okay, there's options. You could do it right here with your partner. It's about 15 minutes before 12:30. Or you can go to lunch and do it over lunch, but it might be a lot more difficult to really tell the truth over lunch. Or you can do it some other time. And I want to really encourage you to do that exercise after lunch and the one after or before dinner we just discussed. And thank you very much for your attention, and see you at lunch.